From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking today about an effort that is afoot to create more opportunities for solar energy, particularly for those consumers who don't have the ability to put solar panels on their property, on their houses. Maybe they live in apartments. Maybe their structure isn't built for that sort of thing. You know, most structures weren't years and years ago. And we're going to talk about a new bill that is proposed before the Wisconsin State Legislature that some advocates say could alleviate some of that access issue that a lot of consumers have in Wisconsin. Joining us today are three voices in favor of the subject: Alicia Leinberger, who is with Ethos Green Power Cooperative in Viroqua. She's also a board member of Renew Wisconsin. Alicia, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having this important conversation, Ezra.
Certainly. Scott Coonan is the executive director of Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum. Scott, thank you for being here.
Appreciate it, sir. Looking forward to it.
And Nicole Rakovich is the Director of Sustainability with Organic Valley. Nicole, thank you very much.
Yes. Hi. Happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm glad to be having this conversation. Renewable energy has been getting more and more attention as technology improves and makes it actually more and more practical. So it's interesting to see this come up. Let's talk, Scott, your organization is one of the main thrusts behind this bill. It's pretty early in the process. It's still a draft. It doesn't have a bill number yet, but a bill that is in the beginning stages of moving through the legislature. Talk about what you're hoping that this effort accomplishes.
Yeah, Ezra, I think, you know, one of the first things I think everybody and your listeners, I think you touched on it for a second, but zooming back to 30,000 foot view, kind of, you touched on it and said renewables are getting an increasing amount of attention, right? And they're in the news more. You're seeing more news about them being deployed across the state in different ways. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But, you know, one of the prime reasons and one of the things that we always want to get across to folks is renewables are changing significantly, and the cost, especially on solar, is dropping really significantly. It's come down almost 100-fold in the last 10 years. So there are some real opportunities, kind of with the new economics behind some of these technologies that we have in Wisconsin here. And that's what I think this bill gets at. Solar is going to be deployed across this state in a lot of different ways. Sometimes it'll be on a person's home or business. Sometimes, obviously, we're doing some really large utility scale projects, really large projects across the state. It's going to look a lot different in a lot of different areas. And community solar is one of those areas where I think we have a real opportunity. You touched on it for a second there, Ezra. Not everybody in this state is going to have the opportunity to put solar panels on their home or on their own business. We estimate roughly 40, maybe 50% of residences in the state, because of shade and because of other things, wouldn't have the opportunity to actually put solar on their own homes. This offers them another opportunity to get into this marketplace. And that, I think, is really, really big. The fact that this bill is led by Republicans, too, I think is a really kind of a cool thing. And I think it builds us some momentum a little bit. This obviously traditionally hasn't been a conservative issue. But I think as you see the technology coming along and being used more and more across the state, some of the old political lines and divisions around this issue are starting to break down. And we're really starting to find some pragmatic middle ground on some of this stuff.
It's interesting that you bring up that that it's a Republican-sponsored bill, and specifically the fact that these kinds of efforts are not traditionally in the conservative wheelhouse. Would you attribute that change more to conservatives being more willing to talk about environmental subject matter, or is it more that they're approaching it from this making more sense from a financial or business perspective?
I think we've approached this bill from a financial and business perspective, right? I mean, there is an economic opportunity for the state of Wisconsin, and there's a big opportunity for communities across the state to take advantage of community solar development. And I like to think of this as, you know, every community across the state of Wisconsin has an industrial park or a business park, right? And like there's a 20 to 25 acre plot of land that's always there that could be used for a community solar site. And then you're siting energy generation right where the demand is too. And that kind of, that bumps up your efficiency and it's a, could be a really cool tool for communities to use. So we've been pursuing this from the economic and kind of that, you know, that base money argument. And I think, you know, as the technology becomes more and more competitive in the marketplace, that argument is starting to get some real wheels on it.
That's Scott Coonan from the Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum. Also joining us today is Alicia Leinberger from the Ethos Green Power Cooperative in Viroqua. Alicia, I'm interested in hearing about this for you because one of the things that this supposedly does is to give the Wisconsin State Journal says about 75% of consumers don't have access to this kind of technology just because of the space that they live in. How does this effort give those people better access to renewable energy?
Yeah, that's true, Ezra. It's a very good point that most people, you know, if you drive through, when you're talking about homes, if you're driving through a neighborhood, you'll notice that many roofs are in the wrong direction or aren't structurally wouldn't structurally benefit from having more load on them with solar panels. And in a lot of cases, neighborhoods with big trees create shading. So it makes it impossible. And on the business side, kind of to what Scott was pointing at, many businesses don't actually have the space where they are or the roof space, the land space or the roof space to be able to back up or generate their own power behind the meter and get that cost control structure in place. So this community solar legislation would allow, and really it's just creating a pathway to our already existing regulatory system. It's creating a new pathway for a different way of generating our energy and consuming it in a more distributed manner. And that allows all of us to have more cost control. It's providing access and choice.
Nicole Rakovich is with Organic Valley. And Nicole, I want to talk about the other efforts that Organic Valley makes in terms of sustainability later. But right now, in terms of your specific involvement with this proposed bill, one of the things that you've pointed out in the Wisconsin Journal article is that this is more something that you're happy for on behalf of your member farmers. How does this benefit them?
Yes. So I think community solar gives our farmer members another opportunity to participate in solar energy. Not every farmer is able to put up the capital and own a solar array on his or her own farm. A lot of what drives solar installations is being able to take advantage of the federal tax credit. And our membership is, you know, by and large, small family farmers. So they're not always able to take advantage of many of those incentives that allow projects to get installed on farm. So I think, community solar just gives another opportunity for farmers to participate in solar energy.
And Ezra, if I can just comment on what Nicole's talking about, and Scott saying that the price of solar is coming down, the added benefit of community solar over building it on your own roof or your business roof or even your own land in a small way is you get an economy of scale. And so it allows for the cost of that power to become even more beneficial to all customers across the grid, and it allows cost control for the actual subscribers. So you have both benefits access wise.
That's an interesting point, Alicia. And I'll just for clarification for people who might have listened to some previous solar-related conversations we've had on this show, we've talked about a thing in the past called a group buy, where people get together and they get the buying power advantage of discounted supplies and installation and that kind of thing, but they still would then have the actual hardware installed on their property. This is a different model where consumers are buying into or subscribing to an operation that isn't located on their property, but is actually located somewhere else. Isn't that right, Alicia?
Yeah, exactly. So you're building it in one big place. And another benefit to farmers and rural economies is often that's where the land is. And so that's where we're going to be building, which brings jobs to that economy, in addition to providing very long-term leases to farmers and landowners for income off of those generating stations. Yeah. And so you're right. It's kind of in the same vein of group buys where you're getting an economy of scale, but it's taking it one step further and actually quite a bit more cost savings when you're doing it in one big area and then putting the power onto the grid for everyone to share.
Scott, is this, people would be familiar with the co-op model where a bunch of people, you know, invest in a thing like that and then they sort of mutually own it. Is this like that, or is this like a company starts this thing and then you can sort of subscribe to it and then you can come in and out of it as you wish?
So I think of it almost as a product offered, right? So a developer is going to come in, a community solar developer will come in and they'll test the market, right? They'll see if there's demand from, you know, from residents or from businesses in the area, you know, whatever, in the community to see if there's real demand. Yes, I would like to be a part. I would like to buy in on this, you know, community solar array that you're thinking about building in my community. So I think of it almost as a product being offered. And that kind of gets back to the point here of the policy change, is right now we don't have the right policy and regulation in place in Wisconsin for companies to be able to even offer that product right now. So we have to, we're starting from base here in Wisconsin. And I think it's important for, you know, for your listeners, we're not reinventing the wheel here. 22 other states across the country have some form of community solar programs. Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, I mean, quite a few of our Midwest counterparts are already doing this to a large degree. So we're not reinventing the wheel, really. You know, a lot of other states are they have this product offered. They have developers that are doing this business. So it's just a matter, again, of making sure that we have the right, you know, regulatory framework in place to make this market work and to see what the real interest is across the state.
So the opportunity doesn't exist for companies to come in and develop a solar farm, if you will, and then offer the opportunity for consumers to directly come and be involved in it like that. But a company can develop solar and then sell that to an energy provider, can't they?
They yes. can. Yep, they can and they are. So we are doing a lot of, we'd mentioned it, I think, at the beginning of this talk here, we are doing a lot of that big utility scale development, right? The, you know, 100, 200 megawatts, a couple thousand acres, that kind of stuff. There's a lot of that going on across the state. And that's where you build it and you basically sell it straight to the utility or the cooperative, right? We are doing a lot of that. But again, where we're missing in Wisconsin here is, especially in solar, all of that downscale market, the smaller stuff, the more flexible stuff. I want to be able to put solar panels on a landfill, you know, somewhere where there's not usable land. You got 20 or 30 acres there. Let's add some value to it and put some solar panels on top and generate electricity, right? I mean, so we in Wisconsin, that's again where we got to get back to figuring out if we have the right regulation in place to really take advantage of that downscale market a little bit more, where solar can be flexible, and I think it can be more beneficial for local communities.
And who would qualify for something like this? Would somebody have to? I mean, what kind of application process might there be, or is it a particular niche that you're looking for? Is it literally anybody who thinks they can't necessarily put solar right on their property?
Yeah, I mean, as a consumer, you would be. I mean, you're free to to buy the product, right? I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of the goal of this legislation. You're free, if somebody offers it to you, you're free to be able to buy that product as a consumer. On the developer side, we are talking about putting in place a program, a regulated program through the Public Service Commission that developers would have to apply to be able to do community solar in the state. So we have some guardrails in place to protect the consumer and make sure that developers are, you know, good citizens in the community. So there is a little bit of that, some oversight to the program at large.
But Ezra, I'd like to bring that back just a second to a point you made, because you asked the question about, well, isn't this happening anyhow? And I think that's a really good point, is that it is happening all over the place, but the utilities are doing it, the utilities are owning it, and their shareholders are profiting off of it. And the idea to have a community solar also adds to what Scott's talking about, the down market, the smaller, more flexible distributed generation. But even more importantly, it gives that value back to the customers, to the electric customers in the state. As a subscriber, you're gaining some of that value rather than sending it out of the state, because they're using those developers as well. They're using out-of-state developers. So instead of walking out the door with it, it goes back into the pockets of the subscribers and the actual customers here in Wisconsin. And in addition, you would only have access to it if there was, like Scott's saying, there's an application process and there's a program offered. So it's not like once this legislation passes, everyone would have access to it. It would be slowly developing and they'd have to work that out with the utility. But the PSC would be the way that they would get all of those specifications worked out, and then the program would be offered to all subscribers that way.
That's Alicia Leinberger from Ethos Green Power Cooperative in Viroqua and a board member with Renew Wisconsin. Alicia, thank you very much for your input in this conversation. Scott Coonan is with the Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum. He's with us as well as Nicole Rakovich, the Director of Sustainability for Organic Valley. We'll be talking to all of them more as our show continues. If you've missed part of this conversation and want to check it out, you can find all of our shows online at WPR.org/newsmakers. If you want to shoot us a note, feel free to send an email to newsmakers@WPR.org. That's newsmakers@WPR.org. Our conversation continues in just a second. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern Wisconsin studios, joined today by Nicole Rakovich from Organic Valley, Scott Coonan from the Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum, and Alicia Leinberger from Ethos Green Power Cooperative in Viroqua. I appreciate all of them joining us, and we're going to take a moment. We're talking about a bill that's in draft form at the moment. It's a Republican-supported bill hopefully, advocates say it would bring solar energy opportunities to a broader community by allowing people to subscribe to that sort of thing. And we're talking about that today on Newsmakers. I want to hear from each of these organizations about some of the other work that they're involved in, though. Let's start with Scott. Talk about the Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum, what your organization is all about and what you're involved in.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Ezra. So I started the organization about 4 years ago, actually, with the express, idea that these technologies are coming, and we're going to have to figure out how to pragmatically utilize them in the state of Wisconsin. So I started Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum. We talk a lot about renewables, wind and solar, but we also talk about, you know, some really new things like electric vehicles and energy storage technologies that are out there as well. But we kind of approach all of that from a market perspective, from a free market perspective, from maybe a little bit more of a conservative perspective, to try and figure out how maybe we can bridge the political gap that exists over some of these issues. But also what I'm really interested in is just educating audiences about why some of these technologies are being deployed now across the state, across the Midwest, and across the country, And I really am very, very interested in how we can pragmatically figure out how to best utilize technologies like solar to Wisconsin's advantage, period. So that's what our organization does. We spend a lot of time traveling across the state, talking to, you know, many, many different groups about this stuff, about the energy transition, about where Wisconsin is now in our energy stack and where we're going. And it's very exciting. I'm very, very passionate about the work.
Nicole Rakovich with Organic Valley. You're the director of sustainability at Organic Valley. Other than actually offering organic products to people, what are your interests as a co-op in sustainability efforts in, you know, throughout your area and with all your farmers?
Well, we've been on a journey for a long time now to get to 100% renewable electricity, and we actually achieved that goal a couple of years ago now, back in summer of 2019. And that journey started back in 2012 when we partnered on a small community wind farm on our Cashin campus through a combination of on-site solar. And then our final project is we helped to sponsor 12 megawatts of solar energy that got us to 100% renewable electricity. So that's on our business side. And then aside from that, we provide technical and grant writing assistance to our farmer members to help them install their own solar on their own farms, and then also help them explore other avenues to participate in renewable energy, such as third-party owned or community-owned solar.
As you mentioned before, the cost of any kind of, you know, new technology or changing the way a farm is powered can be a little bit daunting, especially on a family farm where the margin is pretty slim in terms of how much expendable cash you have to operate with. Have you found your farmers to be pretty receptive to these efforts?
Yep, we have a lot of interest. Yep, farmers are super interested in solar energy, more so over the years as the price has come down. And one of the things that's really appealing to them is we help write the USDA REAP grant, which can provide 25% of the project cost for farmers or other rural businesses. That helps them.
So having 25% of the cost covered would just reduce the amount of time that it would take for them to see a net benefit from, you know, from the cost savings perspective of having lower energy bills.
Yes, exactly. Yep. It helps the system pay itself back faster for sure.
Alicia Leinberger is with Ethos Green Power Cooperative. Tell us about Ethos, Alicia.
We are a solar installer and service company in Viroqua, Wisconsin. And this year we just became a co-op. So that was very exciting. Let's see, we're about 13 people now and growing strong. But I would say that my participation in this conversation really comes from my board renew seat on the board there, because we're a pretty small company. We wouldn't really even be participating in these community solar right away, but over time we probably would, and it would provide that kind of growth incentive that allows us to hire more and more, especially young folks that can then live in rural areas and raise families. And we really need that kind of economic growth in rural areas. But my job on the board of Renew Wisconsin, just so that people understand the longevity, we just celebrated 30 years last night. And it's all policy and advocacy around getting more renewables onto the grid mix. And however we can do that, we do promote specifically behind the meter or customer owned generation, but this community solar is initiative and legislation is very exciting because it gives so much more access to so many more people. And it's something that we've been dreaming about for a very long time. And I will say that it's wonderful to work with all kinds of conservative thinking, conservative minded and financially responsible people to get this done. So I really appreciate Scott's organization and their work on this. And I would also like to add, just because you asked earlier about the co-op idea, Renew Wisconsin, we recently were approved a WEDIC grant to form a community solar co-op in Wisconsin. And what this would do is it would allow for everyday people to become investors, owners, rather than having an out-of-state development company. I mean, they would be involved, but they would not have all of the ownership. We could actually have ownership of the generation in addition to this kind of initiative, which is, more direct, kind of a stepping stone from the utility owned. So I'm very excited to be part of all of these growth efforts in Wisconsin.
That's all very interesting. And again, today's subject is this community solar bill that's right now it's in draft form. Scott, I'm interested to know where it goes from here. What has to happen for that to get a bill number to actually, I guess it's got to go through whichever committees it gets assigned to. And how long will it take before there's even, potential action on a bill that's in the current stage?
Yeah, we think this bill will most likely have a public hearing in the Assembly and the Senate sometime this fall. So we're probably looking at September, maybe October. And then I think the real challenge, and maybe a lot of your listeners can relate, this has to be bipartisan at the end of the day, right? In order to get a bill passed in Wisconsin, you have to get the Republican legislature to sign off, and then it has to go to the Democrat governor for a signature. And that is hard to do. It's hard to do in energy policy, and it seems like it's hard to do in a lot of different things. So so we have to get agreement across the political aisle on this, which I think we're well positioned to do. This checks, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, renewables increasingly check a lot of boxes for both sides of the political divide, red and blue, right? So I think we're in a really good spot to make this happen. But a lot of the action in Madison will probably take place in the fall months here.
One of the criticisms of the bill is that it allows developers from out of state, and as you mentioned, it could be the same developers who are actually doing the work for power companies as well. But it allows them to continually profit off of these efforts, and it wouldn't benefit area consumers as much as it would benefit these companies who exist out of state. I heard Alicia turn her microphone on. I know you want to get at this one, Alicia.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the ironies of their criticisms is it's the same thing and it's fine for their shareholders, but it's not okay for us as electric customers. And I feel like this legislation is adding some meat to the PSC's role of having the utilities serve us. This is a way there. We know that there's a huge amount of demand. Heck, in Vernon County, the first community solar that was 300 kilowatts back, my gosh, probably 10 more years, 12 years now. That thing sold out in 2 weeks. Everybody wanted it. And as it gets out there, especially when it's community owned solar, not utility built and sold to them, but community owned solar, then it makes so much financial sense to people that they want to get involved. So I feel like if it's good for the goose, it should be even better for the gander, or switching that around.
Ezra, if you wouldn't mind, just hop in for a second. I actually think a little bit of the opposite of your question.
Okay.
And I think, so everybody kind of knows there's a small business electrical contractor in every community, right? And all across the state of Wisconsin. And right now, a lot of those small guys are doing the rooftop solar stuff, right? They're doing smaller systems where you put a few panels on somebody's rooftop, that kind of thing. They're doing a lot of that solar market. But a lot of the small contractors and small business electrical contractors across the state, they don't have any way to scale their business up from there. And community solar could be a market where instead of going from, 1 kilowatt, a couple of solar panels on a rooftop to 10 megawatts in a couple hundred acres in a field, you can't make that jump. But community solar, where you could do maybe 1 megawatt, a smaller system, you can really start to build your capacity up. So I actually think that this is a jobs and investment bill for small business electrical contractors across the state. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for them to bust into that market and actually start to grow their capacity as businesses. I think it could be really tremendous for a lot of those guys.
I know free market advocates sometimes bristle a little bit when you start limiting different people's access to bidding on different projects or whatever. But is there a way that this bill could be fashioned in such a way that it would actually prioritize locally based contractors and businesses to get involved in the development of it rather than those out-of-state actors?
As Scott points to, we need to scale up. We can't go from here to tomorrow. So I'm very confident that once this bill passes and it starts becoming normal and commonplace, and there is that sort of economic security in investing in expanding these small rural businesses, I'm very confident that we will have that expansion here, and that the utilities will prefer to work with local folks. So I think it's like our stepping stone. But if the legislation doesn't happen, then we're going to stay small, and yeah, we're not going to have the kind of impact that we could and that we know that we should have.
That's Alicia Leinberger with the Renew Wisconsin and the Ethos Green Power Cooperative in Viroqua. Scott Coonan is with us as well today, the executive director and founder of Wisconsin Conservative Energy Forum, and Nicole Rakovich is the director of sustainability for Organic Valley. I'd like to thank all of my guests for being here today. Thank you very much for your time and for sharing your expertise. Of course, after this, we're going to hear an opposing viewpoint. Jennifer Schilling from Dairyland Power is joining us. Her organization, not specifically affected by this bill, but they are advocating the point of view of a number of different power companies against this legislation, and we'll hear that conversation coming up next. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, our email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. newsmakers@wpr.org. I'm Ezra Wall. Newsmakers continues in just a moment right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall, talking about solar power today. And in particular, we've been talking about a solar energy bill that is hitting the legislature soon, if not already, that would change some of the ways that power companies would be basically required to interact with solar power. Joining us now is Jennifer Schilling, whose name you would recognize. She's been a guest on this program before in her former capacity as a state legislator. She's now the government relations manager for Dairyland Power. Jennifer, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Ezra, it is a pleasure to join you. Thank you very much.
So Dairyland is not immediately, if this bill were to pass, Dairyland would not immediately be affected, but in solidarity, because you're a co-op, but in solidarity with other businesses that are involved in generating power for people, you are among the numbers speaking out against this proposal. Talk about why you think it's a bad idea.
I'm happy to do that. I think maybe just to step back a little bit about who we are, who is Dairyland Power Cooperative, who our members are, and what we are currently doing and growing our portfolio for solar, and certainly very supportive and investing in our solar programs and in the generation of energy from solar. Dairyland Power is a generation and transmission electric cooperative located in La Crosse. We serve 24 cooperative members in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa, as well as 17 municipal customers. We have a total members of about 280,000 members serving about 600,000 population. We have over 3,200 miles of transmission lines and 281 substations that are located in about 44,000 square miles. We certainly are focused, Dairyland is focused on a sustainable future. We have strategically and purposefully been diversifying our generating resources, both in a response to our member asks and inquiries and interests, but also knowing what we need to do to be sustainable in the future. So we have had significant additions of wind and solar renewable energy, and we're going to continue to do that here in Dairyland, we have power purchase agreements that we were going to continue to have those renewable resources, add those to our portfolio. We have over 60 distributed community solar projects completed or that are pending, totaling about 55 megawatts. And so we continue to be the leader in Wisconsin, adding significantly. We actually have a power purchase agreement for 149 megawatts with Badger State Solar, a facility that they are developing Ranger Power in southern Wisconsin. And that's expected to be online in 2023 with powering about 25,000 homes. And so certainly as a utility, we recognize the importance and the demand and the interest and the priority of our renewable portfolios. And with solar, we continue to grow that. As you had mentioned, the community solar bill, while we think it is well-intentioned, it ultimately impose higher electricity costs on businesses and homeowners and on members. And as you point out, as a cooperative, we are not regulated by the Public Service Commission. The other investor-owned utilities in Wisconsin are. This bill would significantly impact them. It would certainly disrupt the regulatory structure that we have here in Wisconsin. And already in Wisconsin, utilities are adding and planning to add thousands of megawatts of utility solar in the future. And so, again, as we look at those choices that consumers and customers have, customers and members have, solar is something one that they have a growing choice in.
So you talked about some of the efforts that you're involved in already, but your opposition to this this bill is not simply that you're against solar or against alternative forms of energy. There's more to it than that.
Oh, definitely. We are embracing and growing our solar portfolio here with Dairyland, with our power purchase agreements, and with working with our distribution co-ops and some of their own solar projects that they have. So we certainly, we support community solar projects that work with Wisconsin's effective regulatory structure, because when they are designed correctly, they help promote renewable energy development while protecting all of the utility customers. And right now, the bill, it's a draft right now. It does not have a bill number as of today, but it doesn't meet that balance. It would upend the Wisconsin utility regulatory structure designed to protect all customers, and the legislation explicitly calls for shifting participation costs onto non-participating utility customers. And while probably your listeners are thinking, what exactly does this mean? What's the example? And I think the example of what community solar and our opposition to this bill is, as the example that I thought about was, if you remember the restaurant chain Prime Quarter, it was a restaurant chain where you could grill your own steak. And so you would go into this restaurant. And so obviously the restaurant has invested in the costs of building the restaurant, of powering it with electricity, of purchasing silverware, of hiring staff. They have taken all that risk and investment on. You come in and you grill your own steak, and then they serve it to you. Well, this example of community solar would be if I came in from home with my own steak and I went to the restaurant and I grilled it, I obviously would have none of the risk, but I would have all of the reward, because I would be coming in and utilizing the investment that the restaurant, or in this case, utilities, have made for lines, for reliability, for generation, for backup, if you know, when we need additional energy. And so that's kind of how I explain it, is the Prime Quarter grill your own steak. And you can do that when you come in and you purchase the steak from the restaurant. However, if you're coming in with your steak from home, you're not necessarily, you're shifting those costs of that service onto other customers. And that's what some of our concern is with how the community solar bill is currently drafted.
So you mentioned, though, other instances where you've reached purchase agreements to get power from other solar operators and those kinds of things. What would be the difference between a purchase agreement with one of those companies and again, it wouldn't affect you as a cooperative right away, but a company like another power company being required to enter to purchase power from one of these community sites?
Well, in Wisconsin, Dairyland Power, we have 18 member cooperatives that are participating in 36 local distributed solar projects, totaling over 33 megawatts. Of those projects, 11 of them are true community solar projects benefiting subscribers. The remaining projects benefit all cooperative members. And those cooperative members, they really prefer local solar projects. And so it's, we are not shifting costs. The use of the solar power is distributed and utilized to all of the members versus shifting costs to those who have not invested in solar and still being responsible for that investment. And I think one of the concerns with this bill draft is that it would require the local utility would be required to maintain the grid and infrastructure to support the facilities, including providing reliable power during times that the facility is not producing power, but they are shifting those costs onto those customers or members that are not utilizing the solar power.
Now, one of the objections that's raised is that the bill draft, if it becomes an actual bill, and then depending on how many changes are made to it in the entire process, which can just take forever and make mincemeat out of some bills. But let's say it gets through all of that and it looks the same as it does now. One of the objections is that it would benefit these out-of-state developers, these out-of-state operators. It helped me understand, because I really honestly don't know very much about how this works. Would these operators be building facilities out of state to generate this solar power, or would the actual solar facilities be built in Wisconsin and just developed or run by people, operators out of state?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I have seen some of that same concern that the out-of-state community solar developers, they're exempt from being regulated as a public utility. So regardless if they are developing, if they are out-of-state and coming in and developing it, that's one of the concerns, is they are exempt from being regulated as a public utility as they build and develop solar power. Also, the subscribers would sign on to contracts to receive bill credits from the incumbent utility for up to 25 years. And the Wisconsin utilities would be required to carry over excess bill credits in perpetuity. And I know that's kind of in the weeds, but as you look at how the solar developed projects would happen, we certainly have some concerns on that front as well. Also looking at just additional grid interconnection and administrative costs caused by the non-regulated facilities could be passed on to all of the utility customers. So I do think that there has been a robust and aggressive response to this bill draft by investor-owned utilities, by the cooperatives, by Wisconsin Electric Cooperative Association, by some of our stakeholders who are partners with Customers First and Wisconsin Forward Dairyland, which is a co-op, as a group of utility and labor partnerships. So I think the response has been pretty aggressive, asking legislators not to sign on to this legislation and wanting to get out and educate those elected officials about what the unintended consequences and the intended consequences of what this policy would look like.
As we were beginning our conversation, you called this effort well-intentioned. It is a Republican-led effort, and Republicans are not known for being involved in concerns that are also embraced by the environmental community and those kinds of things. A lot of their language about this is couching it as giving people a business advantage or a financial advantage, which you might expect to hear from Republican legislators more often. If it is a good faith effort, as you mentioned, or at least a well-intentioned effort, is there anything that could be done to a draft bill like this that would make it acceptable to you?
You know, I think, and I called it well-intentioned, I think as we look at growing renewables, looking at how we can deal with our carbon footprint, that anything that we can do to kind of green the utility lines, that is something that certainly we are, is a good idea, is well-intentioned, I think is ready, looking to the future to be future ready for utility costs and just climate change and what happens on that front. And so certainly appreciate anyone who's looking to see how we can expand portfolios and look at growing wind and solar and other renewable energies. But really, today's utility regulatory structure, it is balanced. It serves to protect all utility customers. It ensures a reliable power supply and efficient electric grid. And it really stabilizes the prices for customers over the long term. And so I think, again, this bill as drafted, it will demonstrate a disruption to our regulated energy market that we have here and to that balance and structure that we have with the Public Service Commission with utilities.
This my attention was brought to this subject by an excellent article in the Wisconsin State Journal, which I read online at madison.com. And it interests me because solar is a thing that's been talked about for a long time. And yet, as that article pointed out, 75% of the residents of Wisconsin really can't use solar in terms of installing solar panels on their own house. They might live in an apartment complex, or the structure that they live in isn't suitable for that sort of thing to be installed directly on the house, or they don't have enough property that actually, you know, is open to the sunlight for something to be installed on their property. I know that we were laughing about a solar panel that is sitting in your office at the moment, which is obviously being inside isn't really attached to anything. But how can a power company, maybe like yours, maybe like another kind of company, help move the needle so that solar can benefit those 75% that don't have the ability to become directly involved in it?
That is the lane that utility solar provides. That building out utility community solar is the answer for areas of low income where they maybe can't afford, or if you're looking at rentals and putting the solar panels on that in urban areas, but also in rural areas. And as I had mentioned, utilities are already planning to add thousands of megawatts through utility scale solar projects. They're looking at investing in battery storage as well in the coming years, which will be a more effective way to lower the cost of energy costs to customers and to members. And so if it's Dairyland Power, if it's one of our cooperative members that is investing in building and creating utility solar, if it's one of the investor owned in Wisconsin that are looking to expand utility solar, that is the lane that is the best tool to use. And some of those examples where you've talked about, maybe if it's the density issue, if it is maybe an economic issue, and certainly it impacts all and would benefit all customers of the economic status that they have.
You talked about being involved in wind as well, and I think wind and solar are basically the two main sustainable energy efforts that most people in the public would have been aware of. Especially as they go about their daily lives, they might have seen solar panels, they might have seen wind turbines, that kind of thing. Is there a way to know like which one of those are most effective, or like at Dairyland, which one you're investing in more than the other?
We have significant additions of wind and solar are going to continue to be made. We also are in the process of permitting and building a combined cycle natural gas plant up on the Nemadji Trail Energy Center up in Superior. Other resources that we use are coal, natural gas, hydro, and biogas. Interestingly, we just decommissioned our coal plant in Genoa in June 1st, that we are in the process of decommissioning that. And so certainly shifting our resources and responding to members for additional investments in renewables is exactly how we are responding. It's in 2020, Dairyland and the board approved a goal of 50% reduction in carbon dioxide rates by 2030 from our 2005 rates. So we want to be forward looking. We want to be a good neighbor. We want to be responsible as far as how we are addressing climate change and what we can be doing to kind of green up those transmission lines. Also want to just point out that when we are looking to increase renewable energy and the use of that, that also comes with the transmission side of things and siting additional transmission lines to carry and move that energy to communities. And so as we look at increasing renewable energy, we also have to have that discussion about transmission lines and the importance of siting them in a timely way and then the construction of them.
Jennifer Schilling is with Dairyland Power. She's the government relations manager for Dairyland. Jennifer, I appreciate your sharing some time with us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra, and just go and shine on.
Absolutely. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. There are a few opportunities to catch our show each week. Of course, 10 a.m. Fridays, our show originates on the Ideas Network 90.3. We repeat at 7 p.m. Fridays on NPR News and Music 88.9. Obviously, we're always online at WPR.org/newsmakers. My producer is Dawn Jewell. Thanks very much to her. Please join us again next time for another episode of Newsmakers. I look forward to seeing you then. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.